Hello. Your chapter 3 assignments in Mastering Chemistry are due on Friday night, so we're going to finish chapter 3 today. We'll get through what we need to, and you'll have to have the assignment finished by Friday night. So chapters 1 through 3 will be covered on the exam that's on Monday, and we talked about that last night. So let's do that. So those are my recommendations for practicing for the exam. Plenty of practice exams on the webpage from lots of different places, some from me, some from not me. I've assigned you those end of chapter problems that are very important for practicing. Mastering chemistry exercises can be reworked for practice. If you used any of the hints before, when you're reworking them, make sure you can do them without hints. Otherwise, that's about it for what I have up there. Has anybody thought of any questions about the exam or about anything otherwise? Or are we all just peachy? So, let's get right into it. We got plenty to do. So, we had calculated mass percents at the end of last time. If you were just given a formula, I had you calculate the percent just using the mass of the element divided by the mass of the compound using molar masses, and that was pretty simple. We got that. Here's what you do if you're ever given a percent in a problem. So if you see some problem that you're given, you identify that there is a percentage value in that problem. This is one, I think, pretty simple way of dealing with that is consistent with our method of canceling units and so on. So it's very consistent with that. Let's use, if you're given something like a mass percent, let's use that as a conversion factor between the element and the compound. So here's our question. 3.5 kilogram sample is found to contain 2.6%, what's PB? Lead. How many grams of, well, I guess I have it written right in the next sentence there. How many grams of lead are present? So I have given you the mass of a sample. I've given you the percent of one element that's contained within that. It could be a compound or a mixture or whatever. Okay? But 2.6% of that mass comes from lead. There are probably a billion different ways of solving this, but let me just show you one way that is, I think, pretty straightforward and lets you cancel out units so you can sort of check your work and make sure you haven't accidentally divided when you should be multiplying or something like that. So if we have a mass percent, we can interpret that same number as how much it is per 100 grams. That's what a percent is. 50% is 50 out of 100, right? 2% is 2 out of 100. So if I have 2.6% lead, if I had a 100-gram sample, how many grams of lead would that be? Simple, 2.6. So this right here can be used as a conversion factor. Anytime you have something, one thing per another thing, for a 100-gram sample, there are 2.6 grams of lead. We can make a conversion factor out of that. Converting between a mass of the whole sample and a mass of just lead itself. So say I'm doing this as a unit conversion. What number would I start with? 3.5 kilograms? I like that. A sample, let's just say it like that. What should I convert kilograms into? Grams? Because I'm asking about grams, and our conversion factor, we could say, of a 100-gram sample, 2.6 are from lead. So how do I convert kilograms into grams? 1 kilogram, 10 to the third, 1,000. Yeah. should all be able to do that. Now, if this is the conversion factor we got out of the percent, then what should I put on the bottom? 100 or 2.6? Think about it. I'm starting with our sample, right? So if I continued this, does that help? Which one of these two should I put on the bottom? Yeah, this one. 100 grams of sample. So the top should say what? I just threw in this kilograms to grams thing as a reminder that the units aren't always going to be the same. But if you have something like this, especially if you have to convert a unit first, it's nice to make this percent into a conversion factor. This is the way the book does it if you go through the book's sample problems. So the units cancel very nicely. All we did is say 2.6% means 2.6 grams out of 100 grams. So, plug that into your calculator, if you would. How many sig figs should this answer have? Two? Thousand's exact. 100 is exact. What'd you get? And look to make sure your answer makes sense. If I have 3.5 grams, that's 3,005, or 3.5 kilograms, that's 3,500 grams. Does it make sense that our answer here is small compared to that? Why? Yeah. Of our sample, only 2.6% is lead. A real easy way to figure out if you did this backwards is understanding what the part is and understanding what the whole is. Okay? If you would have gotten the, I don't know, 250 kilograms or something like that as your answer, you went the wrong way. You can't have more of one element than you have the entire sample itself. But you'd be surprised at how often I see mistakes like that. Things that can go the wrong way. It's really easy to do a divide instead of a multiply, but if you put it back into perspective and say that, well, only 2.6% of this should be lead. My answer should be really small compared to what I started with. Okay? Does that make sense? So make sure you practice that. But if you can get that percent into a conversion factor, then you can use it like anything else. So here's another way we can turn something into a conversion factor. If you have a chemical formula, like Fe2SO4 parentheses 3, that is telling you what the ratio is of different elements within that compound. So this can be used to construct what's called a mole ratio. We'll be using mole ratios a ton in here, and they're useful whenever we have to convert from one substance into a different substance. So a mole ratio is just a fraction that has moles of one thing versus moles of another thing. So converting from moles of X into moles of Y, for instance, that's a mole ratio. So let's assume I had 1 mole of this compound right here. We answered a question similar to this last time. If I have 1 mole of this iron 3 sulfate, how many moles of iron would I have? 2. That 1 mole of this compound contains 2 moles of iron. How many moles of sulfur does it contain? How many moles of oxygen does it contain? Right? So, we just use the subscripts. Okay? And whenever we're setting up a conversion factor like this, we'll assume 1 mole of the compound. Okay? So That's how we set up a conversion factor. 1 mole of the entire compound corresponds to 3 moles of sulfur, for instance. So we'll always set that up, 1 mole of the entire formula, then use the subscript to say how many moles of the element are represented within that 1 mole of the formula. Does that make sense so far? Okay. So we can use that. We can use just a simple conversion factor like one we made up here to figure out how many oxygen atoms are in 8.6 moles of Fe2SO43. So first of all, tell me what the first thing I'll write if I make a conversion out of this. What's the very first thing we'll do? I'll give you a hint. This one will require 2 conversion factors. Okay. Let's do our groups. We're seated a little different.
That's all right. We can get it to work.
So,
how do we want to do this? One of these things. I'll wait till after the exam. Then I'll number you off. We'll go all in different directions. So let you
sit pretty close
today, anyway. But Gregory, you want to come down here?
Sure.
Put the piece for. We've got 4 over there. Okay. So 3, 4 taken care of. Any left over there? 10. So, okay, so I've got 10, so I need 3. These are right next to each other. That's easy. Okay. Group of 3. Okay. And group of 4. Okay. So you can move forward and you can move back. All right. Reasonably sized groups with minimal movement of people.
I would like you to complete the 2 conversion factors. Just answer this question. Make sure you look carefully at what I'm asking. How many O atoms?
So we have to use a conversion factor that we've used before.
Use what we said up in green up there.
Get from one thing to the next.
All right, I saw good things, so. Let's see here. Over on my left over here, what did you write on the bottom of the first fraction? The bottom? Okay. Why does it have to be 1 mole of the compound on the bottom there? Yeah, we have to cancel out the units, so the unit has to be moles of Fe2SO43. Why did I say 1 mole of that compound? Yeah, because that's the simplest way to make a conversion factor out of that formula. If I have one mole of that entire formula, okay, down in front here, what'd you put on the top of that fraction? Twelve moles of what?
Oh.
Yep. Okay. That looks good. And we don't have to worry about O2 or anything like that, because the thing I specifically asked you for were O atoms. So keep it with that same substance. In the middle, you three, what'd you put on the bottom of the third fraction there? One mole of O. Okay. And in the back, what'd you put on the top of it? Yeah. With what unit? Yep. That looks like a good setup to me. Units have canceled. Should the answer to this be large or small?
Large.
Yeah. I'm asking about how many oxygen atoms. That better be a very large number. What do you guys over here get for an answer?
6.2.
Yep. That's what I got. Is that what the other groups got? Okay. So the only new thing here was using the chemical formula as a conversion factor. And what kind of ratio did I call that? I called it a mole ratio, because it's moles of one thing per moles of the other thing. Always, you can always identify that you need a mole ratio when the two things you're at, when the thing that you've given you is different from the thing I'm asking about. When I have one formula over here, this iron 3 sulfate, and I'm asking about O atoms. Whenever they're different, there has to be a mole ratio somewhere in the problem that converts between those two things. So that'll be a common theme. Try this next one. We can all agree on what to start with on this one. I'll only give you one number. Bottom of this fraction, did it look like the bottom of the fraction you used before? Should. Okay. Over to my left over here, what'd you put on top of the first fraction? How many?
Three.
Three? Okay. We use the mole ratio. The last conversion, what's different about this question than the one before? Yeah, I asked for grams. So to go from moles to grams, we use, what's it called? Molar mass. So I put one mole of sulfur on the bottom. What should I put on top? You guys in front, what'd you put?
13.07.
Molar mass is grams per mole from the periodic table. Looks good. Moles of the compound, moles of sulfur, We get grams of sulfur. You guys get an answer in the middle? The three? Two forty-one? How many sig figs should that answer have? Three?
I said 241.
You said 241? Everybody get 241? Run it that way? Yeah, that's fine. I got 240. Oh, I had a different molar mass of sulfur. So 241 looks fine. Everybody get 241? Okay. Here's a similar one. If I have 18 grams of the compound, how many grams of iron are in it? I even gave you the roadmap. There are simpler ways of doing this one, but this roadmap right here will be a specific roadmap that we'll be using over and over and over again several times when we're doing chemical reactions. So it's nice to get used to doing it now. Whenever I've given you grams of one thing and I've asked for grams of another thing, the conversion we use is grams to moles to moles to grams. So where's the mole ratio going to be in this roadmap here? What does a mole ratio convert between? Moles to moles. So where's the moles to moles conversion? Mole ratio. Mass is in grams. Okay. What do I use to get from grams to moles? Yeah. So that mm. What do I use to get from moles to grams? A molar mass. In the appropriate part of the fraction, anyway. They are molar masses. They won't be the same molar mass. Which molar mass will I use for the first one?
Molar mass
of the compound. So, if you can figure that out. I think you can. Has anybody got a molar mass of the compound yet? You guys got it? What'd you get? 399. How many?
91.
Is that what other people got? Yeah. That's grams per what? You guys over here. Per mole, per one mole. Okay. I said a mole ratio comes next. In the back, what do you put for your mole ratio? What can you make? What on the bottom first? One mole of the whole compound. So that on the top, you can put what? Okay. In the front here, what'd you put in the bottom of the last one? Okay. And what's the molar mass of iron? It is over there. What'd you get? 55? Yeah. Grams, moles, moles. As soon as we start using mole ratios, this is why I've been training you to say not only the unit, but the substance that we're talking about. It's important that I put one mole of that entire compound so that I knew that one mole had to go on the bottom of that mole ratio. If all I said was one mole up on the top here, we'd be a little confused about what way to put the mole ratio. Since it's moles over moles, we have to have it be different by moles of what?
Right.
So, purple here. What did you guys get over in the front here? What did you guys get? 5.992?
Yep.
Anybody else get that? No? What'd you get them back?
5.797.
Okay. Ah. Seems like a typo in the calculator to me. Yeah. Remember that. Right. Of course, I mentioned there's probably a much easier way to solve this problem, but it'll use the exact same math. Okay? If you wanted to divide by the molar mass and then multiply by twice of iron's molar mass, you'd get it. But that's the actual math that we're doing here. This just has it written out with what the units are, so that you can troubleshoot if something went wrong. Grams to moles to grams is what we'll be doing when you're given grams of one thing and you're asked about grams of another thing. That's pretty much universal in here. How come you can't go straight from grams to grams? Why can't I say 1 gram of Fe2SO43 has 2 grams of iron? Yeah, it doesn't work that way. With moles, that's like a count that's related to how many atoms there are. It's related to how many actual particles are there. Grams doesn't work because these different atoms have different sizes. Right? Iron is much bigger than oxygen and sulfur and so on. So the mole ratio is the only thing we can use to get from one formula to a different formula, from one substance, the iron sulfate, to iron itself. That makes sense? Good. All right. Let's use those skills to apply them to an actual problem. Okay? Let's determine a chemical formula from element masses. So let's say we're given the elements present in a compound. So a compound contains C, H, and O, or something like that. Okay? I'm telling you what elements are in this compound. And then I can give you masses or mass percentages of those elements. So from that information that we can get experimentally, so we'll talk in a second about where that can come from, but you can actually take a sample of something that you've created and send it off to a lab for analysis, and it'll come back telling you what the percentages of carbon and hydrogen and oxygen are. So from that information, we can get the empirical formula. You remember what the difference is between the empirical and the molecular formula? Yeah, empirical is just whatever the lowest ratio is. It says nothing about what's actually in a molecule, but it tells you what the actual ratio of the elements are in the compound. So useful information still. We'll get to a molecular formula in a second. So here's our problem. I've given you the three elements, C, H, and O, that it contains. And I've given you percents by mass of each of those elements. What is the empirical formula? So let's go at this step by step. If you have percentages, convert them to grams per 100. If you're missing one element's mass, subtract it from a given total mass. So I haven't given you a total here, but if you were given a total mass of a compound, and I gave you mass of carbon and mass of hydrogen, you'd be able to figure out the mass of oxygen, right? If those were the only three elements. Okay. So we'll have to do that maybe on the next one, but pretty simple for this first one. Right? I gave you percentages. What should I say is the mass of carbon for the sake of our problem solving then? Right. 5.0 grams of hydrogen, 26.2 grams of oxygen per 100 grams of a sample. So if we assume we had 100 grams of that substance, this would be how much of the elements we would have. All right. Giving you a little room here, convert each mass to moles using the molar mass of those elements. Yeah, go ahead.
Quick question about the hydrogen there at 5.0%. Is its
Each of these are listed to one decimal place so that they add up to 100.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Typically, when you see percents of three things, they have the same number of decimal places, so they'll be added together to.
So then, does it technically only have two same things then?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. Although we're not as concerned about this in this problem because our final answer won't be a number. Our final answer will be a chemical formula. So,
I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, that's a good observation. So do each of these. Okay? Get them written down on your paper. I've given you room for all three of them. So, over here on my right, what's carbon? What's carbon's smaller mass? Okay. So did you get an answer for moles of carbon?
5.73.
Since we're not going to be ending with this, let's not round it. Okay. Let's keep an extra digit. So, if I had 3 sig figs, but I wanted an extra one since we're not finishing here, I would do 729 maybe. That's a general rule of thumb. If you're not finishing there, write down a couple, you know, one or two more significant figures. Okay? Hydrogen's 1.008, right? What do you guys get for hydrogen in the front? Is that what you used?
You just gave it 1.0.
1.0, you don't want to have your molar mass to have the same or fewer sig figs as the value you've used. Your molar mass should always have more digits so that it's not actually limiting.
4.8603.
Yep. And what do you have for oxygen? Molar mass in the middle, E3? You get something? No? As in the back, you do oxygen?
1.6375.
1.6375, yeah. That's because you divided by what?
16.0.
Okay. Good. So, now, from this one sample, we've arbitrarily just said it's 100 grams of sample, but from the sample, we figured out how many moles of CHNO are in this sample. The chemical formula, or the empirical formula anyway, is the simplest ratio of how many of those elements there are, right? Of how many atoms of each element. So really, I could say it's a 5.7 to 4.96 to 1.63 ratio of CHNO, but that's not a simplest ratio. What could I do, first of all, to make a simplified ratio of these three numbers? Let's divide them all by the smallest, because that'll make something to one, something to something to one. So what we can actually do is sort of put that in the form of a chemical formula, right? C, 5.729 over the smallest, 1.6375. That'll be carbon's subscript. H, 4.9603 over 1.6375, and O. Okay. And here's where you can usually round to something that's simple. Either it's going to be close to a whole number, or close to a half, or close to a third, or something like that. So let's just make this approximately equal to, just doing that dividing, you guys in the middle, you get something for C. What's that closest to? 3.49, so what should we call that? Let's call that 3.5. Okay? Since an actual chemical formula will be a simple ratio, okay? it'll be some sort of exact ratio, so it's not going to be 3.49 or 4.8 or something. Let's make it 3.5. Okay? If I did that, you guys over on the left, what do you do for H? Let's get something for H. 3? Yeah, that number's pretty close to 3. And then what does O have to be? Just 1. Okay. So that's making it into sort of simple numbers, but that's not a valid chemical formula, because what do the subscripts have to be in a chemical formula? They have to be whole numbers. So can I just call that 3.54? No. If I have a 3.5 to 3 to 1 ratio, think of this. Make the subscripts whole numbers by multiplying them all. If you have a 0.5, you're going to double everything. That'll make everything a whole number. If you've got something that's like a 0.3 or a 0.666 or something, you'll triple things to make them into whole numbers. That's usually what you'll have to do. If you have a 0.25 or a 0.75 or something, you'll multiply by 4 to get a whole number ratio. So what should I do? C, 3.5, H, 3, O, multiply by what? 2. Our final answer is C, 7, H, 6, O, 2. So, let's review what we did here. We needed grams of three elements. So if you have percent, make them into grams. Okay. We need to get those grams into moles of the three elements, because that's what defines the ratio. Whenever we get anything into moles, that tells us the ratio of how many things there are. We divide it by the smallest in order to simplify the ratio, so it's something to one. But if we have something like this where it's 3.5 or something, we double them all to make them whole numbers. Does that make sense? Okay. So this is the empirical formula, C7H6O2. That is the simplest whole number ratio of elements present in this compound. Anybody have questions there? Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yep, I'll give you 4 or 5 pieces of scratch paper at the back. If it's a question like this, I would, if I gave you that information up on top, I would give you like a half a page or 2/3 of a page or something like that. So that's a good thing to talk about. On an exam, what I want you to do is do all your work in your scratch paper first, so you'd be as messy and scribbly as you want in your scratch paper, and then in the exam itself, copy the work down, but copy it neatly. So your exam, if I asked this question on the exam, I would expect to see on that page work that looked like that. Okay? And I'm not going to take away if you don't do it exactly the way I do, but it's to your advantage, because if you show your work out neatly and you mess something up somewhere, I'll be able to quickly find where you messed it up and give you accurate partial credit for it.
So this is considered neatly written?
This is neatly written work right here. Okay? So, and if you cross something out and clearly show it beneath it or something, that's not a big deal. But what I don't want to see in the exam is big scribbled out parts and everything all over the place and maybe multiplying here and dividing here. You know, do that. Be as messy as you want on the scratch paper. But so that I can accurately assign partial credit, I would like to see neat work in the exam itself with units canceled and stuff like that. So
on the scratch paper, do you want us to like identify what problem we're working on?
I'm not even going to look at the scratch paper. So you have to hand it in, but I'm not going to look at it. Okay? Does that make sense, everyone? So when you're practicing these, you know, you can do it messy or whatever, but practice doing neatly shown work. Okay? And again, that's to your advantage, because if I see neatly shown work, I can very quickly see, oh, all you did was use the wrong molar mass there. You get, you know, 7.5 out of 8 on that problem or something. Where if it was all messy, all over the place, and you had a silly mistake like a molar mass, but I can't find it, then I can't give you partial credit. That makes sense? All right. Let's go one step further. That was an empirical formula, only the simplest ratio. Let's calculate a molecular formula. So If you're given an empirical formula and a molar mass, you can get a molecular formula. You can get an empirical formula through sending something away for analysis. You can get a molar mass by using a mass spectrometer, something we talked about a little bit before. But you shoot it in this machine, it tells you what the mass is of an atom or a molecule or something. Okay? So both experimental methods, we can figure out what the molecular formula is. So how does that work? Molecular formulas are always whole number multiples of empirical formulas. That should make sense, since the empirical formula is the simplest ratio. We could have maybe twice that many in a molecule, or three times that many or something in a molecule. So if I have a, where am I going here? If I have a molecular formula of C3H6, let's say I have a molecule of 3 carbons and 6 hydrogens, what is its empirical formula? All right, that's a 1-to-2 ratio, all right? So CH2 was multiplied by some whole number to make this molecular formula. For this, and we call that whole number n. Right? When I have an empirical formula, that gets multiplied a certain number of times to make a molecular formula. So what was this empirical formula multiplied by to get this molecular formula? 3. Right? Because CH2 multiplied by 3 is C3H6. Okay? So let me show you the relationships of C3H6 and CH2. If I just went on the periodic table and added those up, C3H6 is 47. CH2 is 14. If I do 47 divided by 14, what do you suppose that equals? Is that a coincidence? No. If I have 3 of those CH2 units, we'll get a mass that's 3 times as big. This is where molar mass comes in. If I know the actual molar mass of the compound, and if I know the empirical formula, I can figure out what this multiplier was. So let me just show you how this actually works. Okay? The idea is multiplying an empirical formula will also multiply its mass. Okay? So a compound has an empirical formula of CH2O. Its molar mass is 60.05. What is its molecular formula? Okay. The way we do this, to figure out this n, this multiplier, it's the molar mass divided by the mass of the empirical formula that we were given. So add up a C, two H's, and an O in your calculator. Anybody get something for an empirical formula mass? 3.026. That's just for CH2O, right? Everybody agree? If I take the molar mass that we're given in the problem for the entire molecule, divide it by the mass of the empirical formula, in this case, what do we get? It has to be a whole number, right? From experimental error, it's going to be 1.999 or 2.01 or something like that. But the actual number is 2, okay? Which means what? CH2O, the empirical formula, gets multiplied by 2. So what is our molecular formula? Okay. So from like the last problem, yeah, go ahead.
On your C3H6, you give the mass of the grams or moles.
probably just added it up wrong.
It's close enough, right?
Okay, I'll fix that. Well, yeah, it was fixed in this version.
All right.
Does that make more sense?
Yeah.
So, if we figured out an empirical formula, like from the last problem, we have a ratio of elements, and then if we also know that this is how big the molecule itself is, we see that the molecule itself is twice as big as the empirical formula, so the molecular formula must be twice what the empirical formula was. Does that make a little more sense? So, all you do, if you're ever given an actual molar mass of a compound, just divide the empirical mass into it. That tells you what you have to multiply. If it's a 3, that means your actual molecules are 3 times what the empirical formula was. Okay? We good on that? Okay. So, this is a variation on those types of problems. Okay? Has the similar type of concept. We can calculate empirical formula and molecular formula if a molar mass is given, but we're just starting with a little different information. This is actually the method that the labs use when you send a sample off for analysis. So this can be done, you know, yourself in a lab if you want to. What happens is you have a compound for analysis. It gets put in a chamber with an excess of oxygen, okay? And then it gets burned up. So they light a spark and it ignites in this chamber. Then they take the resulting gases and they pass it through some filters that absorb carbon dioxide and that absorb water. So that's what happens in combustion. We'll learn all about this reaction later on. But we add oxygen to something and it makes CO2 and H2O. So, if we can figure out, if we know exactly how much CO2 and H2O were produced in that combustion, that's what they get, they just weigh those filters after they run the sample through. Okay. If we know those masses that came out, if we know which elements were in the sample, okay, and if there's anything other than CNH, if there's O or N or anything else, we have to know the total sample mass. We'll see why that is in a second. But if we have that information, we can figure out an empirical formula, at the very least. Okay? So, let's start from the beginning. Here's our problem. I have a 4.3 milligram sample, so that's the total sample mass. Okay. We see that it has 3 elements. Has C, H, and O. And these are the products of combustion. 8.59 milligrams of CO2, 3.52 milligrams of water. We can figure out its empirical formula just from this information, but we'll have to do it step at a sort of steps at a time. Okay? It'll be very similar, though, to the process that we just did. So, I've given you grams of CO2, or milligrams of CO2. Okay? What I need to do is to convert those into moles of carbon and moles of hydrogen. Just like we did in the last one, we wanted moles of all the elements that we had. Okay? Well, let's just sort of start this one, and we'll work on it bit by bit. Okay? I did 8.59 milligrams CO2. Okay. What do you suppose I should convert those milligrams to if we're doing anything with moles or anything? Yeah, let's convert those to grams. 1,000 milligrams in a gram. It's always going to be safe. Okay. So that's grams of CO2. What do you suppose grams of CO2 should be converted into? What do we pretty much always convert grams of things into so far? Yeah. Anybody add up molar mass for CO2? 1C and 2Os? Okay. Now we get to use something we used a few minutes ago. If I've gotten into moles of CO2, how will I get into moles of C? What did I call that conversion factor? A mole ratio. Right. So how many moles of CO2 should I talk about? One. It's always one mole of the compound. This one's easy, though, because one mole of CO2 has how many moles of C? There's just one carbon in that formula, right? So that one's easy. You can see in a second we'll have to do something a little different with H2O, right? Get an answer for that and see if you can do the same thing converting H2O into moles of H. Just take just a second and try to do that. This one on the half page, it's a little tight in there. You might want to write the other one off to the side or the next page or something. You guys over there look like you're almost done. What'd you get for moles of C? Yeah, 9.52 maybe. I start writing using this E notation an awful lot just to save space. That just means times 10 to the minus 4. Okay. In front here, what do you use for your mole ratio, or I'm sorry, what do you use after grams?
After grams, if you put the 18.016 grams.
Mm-hmm. Yep, do milligrams to grams. 18.016 grams of water per
molar mass.
Okay, hence its molar mass. Okay. As over on the right, what do you do for a mole ratio for this one? 2 moles of H for every 1 mole H2O. Everybody get that? The mole ratio? Yeah, that's good. We already did that a few minutes ago. That gets used right here. Okay. You guys in the back get an answer?
3.91
times 10 to the 8. I got 908. I'm keeping an extra digit there.
Oh, okay.
10 to the minus 4. Okay. Everybody good so far? That's using stuff that we've just done already. All right. We have to use the number 2 on this one because if it has elements other than C and H, what do I have to use this for in our problem? Do I have elements other than C and H in our problem? Yeah. Look at the question. Sample contains C, H, and O. Calculate masses of C and H, then subtract those from the total to get mass of the other element. So it's a little bit roundabout. Take these moles, get masses out of them. You guys do setups that look something like that? Times 12.01 times 1.008. Anybody get something for grams of C? Did I get that one yet?
2.344 10 to the negative third.
Yep. Okay. You guys get 3.939 10 to the minus 4 grams of H. Does that look familiar? Okay. So, what was the point of doing that? No idea. Because that's what the instructions said. I gave you a total mass, 4.30 milligrams. What was the point of me getting a mass of carbon and a mass of hydrogen? So I can find the mass of oxygen. Okay? If I had 4.30 milligrams, that's 4.30 times 10 to the minus 3 grams total. And I could subtract those others. I just said minus with parentheses and those other two. Okay. Anybody get something for what? For grams? OO? Anybody get something? No?
Is
it punching?
1.56.
Okay. That's good. That's grams of oxygen, but I don't really need grams of oxygen. What do I really want? moles of oxygen. So before my calculator cools down, what do you want to do to those grams? Something like that, divide by 16. Anybody get something?
9.763 times 10 to the negative.
And that's what?
Moles of oxygen.
It was a little bit roundabout, but now I have moles of C, moles of H, moles of O. What does that mean?
Sure.
Use moles of each element to calculate the empirical formula as before. I'll give you a second, see if you can get that. Organization is good in a problem like this. Our key values are moles of each of the elements. So when you get mole of an element, I like to put a box around that so you can identify it. Which one is the smallest? Carbon? Oxygen? Power of 10 is more important than the number in front of it. Yeah, that's a common mistake.
As long as you can get something closer.
Okay. Anybody get something? C.
I have C2H4O.
Anybody else? Same? Same? Do we have a consensus? Before I draw the fourth line, we good? All right. So, I know that seemed like a whole big production, but you need to break this down into the major into its major parts and have sort of goals for each thing that you're doing. Okay? To start out, our goal was to get moles of C and moles of H. That was using a calculation like before. The only difference is there's a mole ratio in there because they're different things at the start and the end. Okay? Next part, because we have oxygen, we have to do a little subtraction to figure that out. So you had a total mass, you have to figure out masses from each of those so you know what to subtract from the total. Okay? So you got moles of CNH. Get those into grams, subtract from the total, you have grams of oxygen, but we really want moles of all three of the elements. Okay? So when we have moles of C, moles of H, and moles of O, we do like we've done before to get an empirical formula. Okay? If I would have added one more piece of information, if I would have added the molecular formula, anybody know what we would do? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I gave you the molar mass, yeah. If I gave you 150 or something like that, you'd have to get the mass of that and divide that into the 150 to figure out what your multiplier is. Okay? So my recommendation to you is to go back in the notes and print this blank page off. And see if you can do this problem again, maybe later today or something, while it's still sort of fresh in your mind. See if you can do this again while without the help. As an extra practice, I have a difficult combustion problem. We're not going to do this one together, but I will give you a little hint for it. So if you can do this problem, you're going to be in great shape for doing any kind of combustion analysis. Okay? So my little hint is, to look at what we were given. We were given CO2, H2O, and N2. Okay? From the CO2, we could figure out moles of what?
Carbon.
C, yeah. From the H2O, we could figure out what? Moles of H. From the N2, we could figure out moles of? Yeah, N. Look at our sample. It has C, H, N, and O. How am I going to figure out moles of O?
N, C, N.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to have to get masses of one of... We're going to ultimately... Here, let's just make our little goals here. We'll need moles. C, H, and N. We'll then need to get masses. C, H and N, and then subtract. Subtracting from the total will give you what? If I have masses of C, H, and N, and if I subtract those masses from the total, which is up here, what's that going to give us? Mass of O? Which I should use to make what? Moles of O. So. From there, it's a matter of making a formula out of it. I've given you a molar mass. When you get the empirical formula, you divide it in to get your multiplier. Okay? So we're not going to do this one together. If you go and print out the completed notes, I'll have the work shown on this one. So you can try it out and check your answer with that. Okay? But what I like to have students do is to practice with a really difficult problem, because if you can get this, you'll be able to get a simpler problem on the exam. The problem will not be this difficult on the exam. But if you can get to the point where you can feel comfortable with pushing enough numbers around to do something like this, then it won't be an issue on the exam. Okay? So it's a matter of sort of training yourself to do that. One thing you can do is to use milligrams. for all your stuff. All right? Use milligrams and millimoles. Using a molar mass from milligrams will get you into millimoles. That way you're not dealing with tiny little powers of 10 or anything like that. So if you get moles of oat, right, you could do just the same thing with millimoles, which will be more manageable numbers, because all we're looking for in the end are those ratios. So that's a little hint. If you want to try it, try doing it that way. I think that's probably how I'll have it written out when I use it. So the numbers are always going to be pretty small like this, because you're always sending really small samples off to the lab to get analyzed. Usually it's after you've spent months or years making this precious sample, and you don't want to give up very much of it to be burned up for analysis. So, all right. So that's going to take some practice. There's a question or two on the Master in Chemistry for Friday that will involve math like this. There will be probably a show your work problem on the exam that will involve something of today's nature. So.
Avogadro's number into millimoles? Yep. I don't think we need to use Avogadro's number. That's just millimoles. It would just be three fewer powers of 10.
Yeah. If you're raising units to a power, then it would be more hassle than it's worth. But grams to moles is the same ratio as milligrams to millimoles. So carbon, which is 12.01 grams to mole, is 12.01 milligrams per millimole. So it just saves it some powers of 10 to be dealing with. But if you want to do grams, it'll get you the same place. All right. Got just two quick little things for us to talk about at the end that are probably review for a lot of people. Let's write some chemical equations. And let's do a little balancing. Okay? So, chemical equation is what we write on paper to represent a chemical reaction. So chemical reactions happen in the lab. That's when you mix things together and it changes to something else. Okay? Chemical equation is how we write down on paper that change. Okay? So, we talked a little bit about these so far. Solid, liquid, gas, aqueous. And what does that last one mean?
Dissolved water.
Yeah. It's a solution, but specifically in water. Okay. So that AQ phase label is used if I had salt water, right? Sodium chloride that's been dissolved in water, what phase label would that have? Yeah. NaClAQ is salt water. NaCl liquid is what? Not something we encounter regularly, but it's possible. What would I have to do to make NaCl liquid? Say that louder? Yeah. What phase change has to happen to go from normal pure sodium chloride to NaCl liquid? I would have to melt it, and ionic compounds don't want to melt very much. Okay? But that's molten. Its melting point is 850, something like that. So it's you can do it with a torch. It has to be in a ceramic container and a torch. Okay? But this is nasty stuff. It's 850 degrees, and it'll take your finger off. NaClAQ is salt water. So a lot of students, even at this level, like to get those two phase labels mixed up. But there's a big difference. Reactants are what you start with. Products. Got a guest. Okay. Products are the substances that are resulting. So a chemical equation has reactants, an arrow, and products. So let's do a little practice. Let's write this chemical equation with phase labels. Okay? Solid calcium reacts with chlorine gas to produce solid calcium chloride. A couple of things to remember. Pure metals are what? Are pure metals charged?
They're neutral, or are they?
Pure metals, like solid calcium. How would you write that in an equation? Yeah, pure metals are just neutral. Okay? Pure metals, iron, calcium, sodium, gold. If it's a pure metal, it's just that formula. Right? So, solid calcium. Ca, solid. That's it. When is calcium Ca2+? When it's an ion, but when is calcium an ion? Yeah. When it's in a compound, when it's calcium chloride or calcium oxide. Okay? So, chlorine gas. Something special about chlorine. What did I call those kind of elements? Remember, you have a pure element that's one of those diatomic elements we pointed out before. It has the two. Okay. Then what? Solid calcium reacts with chlorine gas to produce, how do I say to produce? Okay. What is calcium chloride? What is the formula for calcium chloride? That's because calcium is a 2+ ion when it's in compounds. Chloride is minus. It's a very handy way to do things. When you're given a name of a compound, put the ionic charges, if it's a metal and a nonmetal, so that you get the right formula. Okay? We all should have had some experience balancing, so we're not going to do this, but I will give you some hints that will help you balance tough ones, okay? Just before we go. First of all, you only add coefficients. Where's a coefficient? What is a coefficient when you're balancing? What's that?
It's the number.
Yeah, it's the number that you would write in front of a chemical formula. Okay? So you can't change the subscripts, because if I changed the subscript of this, what would I be doing? I'd be making it into something different, and you can't do that. Okay? You can only control how many of them you have. If you have an element in your reaction, save it for the last. So in this one down here, what should I save for the end? Yeah, that's because you can put whatever you want in front of that without messing something else up. Okay? If you've had to make a fraction, multiply the fraction through so that the coefficients are all whole numbers. That's important. If you've got a compound with polyatomic ions, if you have sodium sulfate on the left and calcium sulfate on the right, just count how many sulfates there are. There's no need to break it up and count all those individual elements, as long as sulfate stayed as sulfate. If you went SO4 to SO3, then you do have to break them up and count all the elements. But that's a little less common. If you have just SO4 on this side and SO4 on that side, count those as a unit, and that'll help. That'll help make things much simpler. Okay? So we need to go try to balance that one and the... Or balance these ones for practice. Write and balance this chemical equation. You should be able to do that. Do those two on your own. I will have those completed in the notes, though, that you can print out to check your work. Okay. So the mastering chemistry will have balance and practice too. There's lots of practice in the textbook if you're a little rusty on your balancing. So. I will probably have you balance just maybe one chemical equation on this day. So make sure to practice up on that if it's been a while. All right? So that's good. We'll see you on Monday. I'll be checking the discussion boards through the rest of this weekend, over the weekend. So if you come up on something that's giving you trouble, post it on the boards, and I'll be there to help. Okay?